Welcome to episode number 456 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT on Twitter. And I have some topics that you definitely want to weigh in today. We know that the NFL is a passing league, right? The days of 3 yards in a cloud of dust, they are over. Quarterbacks are throwing the ball 40, 50 times every Sunday. So what I decided to look at was the top free agents at the wide receiver and the cornerback positions. You got to throw it to somebody. You got to cover somebody. Pretty important. These are names that you're going to be hearing more and more about. I have a three-part Roberts rant. That's right, the rare three-parter when it comes to the Roberts rant. Normally, I just get fired up about one topic, but I've got three to go over today. How many games will your favorite Major League Baseball team win? The over-under totals for 2017 are out. I'll run down the list coming up. And remember Will Ferrell in the movie Old School? Let's go streaking? Remember that? He's running to the quad. Well, we're going to talk about the best streaks in sports history. And this is covering, you know, basketball, baseball, football, tennis, boxing. I got a lot in here. And you can pick and choose which you think is the best streak. I bring it up, of course, because of what's happening with the UConn women. Tonight, 9 o'clock, they are playing South Carolina, who's also really good. South Carolina is number 6 in the country, and they've only lost 2 games all year. UConn going for win number 100 in a row. Unbelievable. So we'll throw around some of the best streaks of all time, and we'll get to some golf. Tiger Woods on the shelf again. My stance on Tiger is becoming more and more difficult to defend. Plus, you know, now that the NFL season is over, you don't have college football, maybe you watch a little bit more TV. I have a fantastic show to tell you about. I've been binge watching this like crazy. 3 episodes at a time, no problem. Just vegging out on the couch over the weekend when I'm not watching college hoops and watching this show. I was late to it. Some coworkers told me about it. It is great. And you know, I don't throw that word around like all the other media bobbleheads. If a show's just good, I'll tell you it's just good or it's average. This show is not good. It is great. So stay tuned for that. All on episode number 456 of the Sports Report. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast every Monday on GrizzlyProductions.tv and, of course, in the podcast section of iTunes. And keep the tweets coming. Keep following me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. All right, let's start in the NFL here. And I'm focusing on unrestricted free agents. Okay, these are guys that are going to be available, not restricted. These are unrestricted free agents. Let's start at wide receiver. And I'll tell you, it's not a good group. It really isn't. Some of the big names, Alshon Jeffrey. Now, there's a report out there that the Eagles are interested in him. And I live about an hour from Philadelphia. My radio station has carried the Eagles for many, many years, so I follow this organization very closely, and their wide receivers stink. All right, fans are more than a little bit unhappy with the wide receiving core for Carson Wentz. Good tight end in Zach Ertz, but you look at the receivers outside of Jordan Matthews, who's not a star. He's not bad. He's okay. Not a superstar. They are really, really weak at that wide receiver position. Alshon Jeffrey is intriguing. He's 27. He's 6'4", 230. So physically, you look at him, he's going to impress you. Now, the past couple of seasons, he hasn't been playing 16 games. This year, he missed 4 games because of a PED violation. He did have more than 50 catches. He averaged about 16 yards a catch. You're going to hear more about Alshon Jeffrey. Pierre Garçon in Washington, solid, not spectacular. He's not a deep threat. You know, this is your classic possession type of receiver. Almost 80 catches this year, over 1,000 yards, just 3 touchdowns, though. So not a lot of big plays, not a lot of touchdowns out of Pierre Garçon. He's 31, by the way. Jeffrey, 27. Terrell Pryor, interesting name here. Former quarterback, now he's playing wide receiver and had a good season. Almost 80 catches, 1,000 yards, 4 touchdowns, and was a very, very bad offense. And the guy's 6'6". I mean, athletically, he can do a lot of things. He is 28. Kenny Britt, also 28 from the Rams. Close to 70 catches, 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns. So again, this is not an overwhelming wide receiver class. I mean, you're not going to be setting off fireworks and doing jumping jacks, but Alshon Jeffrey is going to get interest because of the physical attributes, his past history. I mean, when this guy came in the league, he was putting up some big, big numbers. Now, it helps when you're playing with Brandon Marshall, who's not there anymore, but not a great group. There's no real depth as far as the unrestricted free agents. Now, let's look at the draft here. Two names that are going to be first-round picks at this position, and I think these are probably the only two wide receivers that go in the first round. Mike Williams from Clemson, who I love, 6'3", 225, really, really good college player, very projectable at that size in the NFL. And then another tall receiver in Corey Davis, who's 6'3", 215, played at Western Michigan. So obviously there will be some people and fans out there that have doubts about this guy. Well, what type of competition did he play? If you look at his numbers, wow. I mean, Nintendo type of numbers here. Like you're using Bo Jackson running the football. I mean, this guy put up monster numbers at Western Michigan. And again, he's 6'3". So Mike Williams, Corey Davis, the two names that you hear a lot about. And Williams will go first of those two. Corey Davis, some have him mid-first round, some late first round. But overall, the point here is wide receivers, whether it's in the draft or unrestricted free agents, kind of slim. Now let's look at the guys that cover those wide receivers, the corners. The top one is A.J. Boye from Houston. He's only 26, 6 feet, 190 pounds. Pro Football Focus, which is a really cool site, they grade every player in the league. His grade was 90.9. So he is definitely the top-rated unrestricted free agent corner. So if your team can't cover, you know, I mentioned the Eagles possibly being interested in Alshon Jeffrey. Their corners are a nightmare. Safeties aren't bad with Malcolm Jenkins back there, but their corners are ridiculous. In fact, they just let Leotis McKelvin go, and he had only been there 1 year. Tried to tell people he couldn't play, and Eagles fans found that out firsthand. But if you need guys that can cover, A.J. Boye, to me, is the top guy out there. Terrence Newman is 38 years old, was with Dallas, now with Minnesota. Morris Claiborne with Dallas, 27. Darius Butler with the Colts, 31. Logan Ryan just won a Super Bowl with New England. He's 26. But again, I don't consider some of these guys stars. Trumaine Johnson from the Rams is 27. Now, here's the bright side. When you look at this draft, it is loaded with corners. Like a 21-year-old on a college campus on his birthday. Loaded. All right. I mean, there could be half a dozen corners that go in the first round. And from big-name schools. Florida's got a couple. Alabama, Ohio State. Washington. This is a really good draft for corners. So if you don't get AJ Boye and you're not thrilled with the other names that I mentioned, you can wait until the draft and get a really good corner there. Because like I said, if you look at the mock drafts out there now, 6-7 corners are going in the first round. Your thoughts on some of those free agents? Let me know on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. TheSportsRPT. This is episode number 456 of the Sports Report podcast. I'm Paul Roberts with you Mondays on the Grizz, grizzlyproductions.tv, and of course in the podcast section of iTunes. All right, the three-part Roberts rant will start with Major League Baseball. MLB is testing a rule change in the rookie-level Gulf Coast League and the Arizona League this summer that will, and I kid you not, automatically put a runner on second base at the start of extra innings. You can't make this stuff up. So if it goes to the 10th inning, there will be a runner on second base. Start the inning, runner on second base. A similar rule has been used internationally and will be in place for the World Baseball Classic, which is coming up next month. Joe Torre, the former Yankees manager, now MLB's chief baseball officer, said, quote, "Let's see what it looks like. It's not fun to watch when you go through your whole pitching staff and wind up bringing in a utility infielder to pitch. As much as it's nice to talk about being at an 18-inning game, it takes time." You know, it does take time. Baseball takes time. That's the nature of the sport. And I think fans get a kick out of seeing a utility infielder come into pitch. Now, obviously, you don't want to see it every week or every 2 weeks, but every now and then, it's interesting. And I understand that Major League Baseball wants to speed up the game. I get that. But this is going too far. If you want to force batters to stay in the box, I'm cool with that. I don't need to see them changing their batting gloves a million different times like Nomar Garciaparra, all right, or stepping out to scratch themselves, whatever. Keep them in the box. But this is absolutely ridiculous. When I first heard this story, you know what I thought of? I thought of playing kickball at recess in elementary school. You know, when it was almost time to go back to class, you know, the teachers are yelling that you had to go back to class. This is what it reminded me of. Like, okay, let's put a person on second base so we can get this kickball game over with. I mean, this is Major League Baseball. This is not elementary school kickball. Why not just go to two strikes instead of three while you're at it? Or three balls instead of four for a walk? Or only play seven innings? I mean, that's fundamentally changing the sport, which is wrong, period, end of story. I'm not budging on this one. This proposal is flat out stupid. An extra inning game is usually full of drama. Don't make it cheesy by putting a runner on second base. And some fans will always think that baseball is boring, that it's too slow, that there's not enough action. I get that. Don't cater to those fans by changing the game like this. This is a radical move. I don't like it at all. Again, keep batters in the box. Maybe shorten the commercial breaks between innings by 30 seconds. Whatever, but not this. Okay. Part two of my rant. How was Terrell Owens not voted in the Hall of Fame? This was his second year of eligibility. You know, sometimes you hear voters, and I think this is lame, but they'll say, well, I don't vote for anyone first ballot, which is just stupid. I mean, so if Babe Ruth was up for the first time, you wouldn't vote for him, or Joe DiMaggio, Bob Gibson, Hank Aaron. It's ridiculous, but some guys think like that. I don't vote for anybody first ballot. If a guy is a lock Hall of Fame player, he should not have to wait a year just because. That is idiotic. The selection committee was made up of 46 media members and two Hall of Fame players, Dan Fouts and James Lofton. As for T.O., he is a five-time first team all pro. I'm not just talking about making the Pro Bowl game. First team all pro, 5 times. Second all time in receiving yards, number 5 in touchdowns with 156, and number 8 in catches with 1,078. He's top 8 in receiving yards, touchdowns, and catches. I mean, if those aren't Hall of Fame numbers, I don't know what you want. I can't help you. To me, there's no debate here whatsoever. This boils down to some media bobbleheads who don't like his attitude. Could T.O. be a prima donna? Absolutely. Did he blow up a good thing in Philadelphia with Andy Reid as head coach and Donovan McNabb at quarterback over his contract? Yes, he did. But, and this is a Fat Albert size but, the man is a Hall of Fame wide receiver. It's not about being your best buddy, okay? It's not about, you know, did he or did he not give you a great interview? You know, I had a professor at Syracuse, the S.I. Newhouse School of Communications, on day one. This was a radio and TV class. Day one, he said, "You are not the story." Always remember that. You are not the story. But with some of these voters, you know, they let their personal opinions get in the way. You know, they become the story here. He's a Hall of Fame player. He was dominant. He was a physical freak. He was a mismatch almost every week. And I like to look at how many great seasons did a player have. He had 7 great seasons. Even at 37 years of age, which was his last year in the NFL with Cincinnati, T.O. caught 72 passes in 14 games with 9 touchdowns. That's what he was doing at 37. So some writers here need to get over themselves and vote T.O. into the Hall of Fame. Part 3 of my Roberts rant today also deals with another Hall of Fame snub this year, and that is Vladimir Guerrero. A total joke. 9-time All-Star, MVP 2004. Look at his numbers for 5 seconds. All right, I'm not even telling you to go in depth. 5 seconds, and you know this guy should have been voted in. We're talking about 9 great seasons for Vlad Guerrero. 318 lifetime hitter. 449 home runs, nearly 1,500 RBIs, and a career OPS, listen to this, because everybody's into OPS now, which is your on base and your slugging percentage put together. His OPS, 931 for his career. How was he not voted into the Hall of Fame? So, those are my 3 rants today. Vlad Guerrero and T.O. getting snubbed, and this dumb rule that MLB is pondering about putting a runner on second base to start extra innings. Your take, welcome on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. TheSportsRPT on Twitter. All right, let's stay with baseball here. The win totals are out for 2017. The Atlantis Casino in Reno is the first sports book with the MLB season win totals. They put the Cubs number at 95.5. More projected wins than anybody else. 95.5. Last year, the Cubs opened at 89, and the head odds maker at Atlantis, Steve Mickelson, I don't know if he was such a believer. Now he is. He says, "I was short on them last year. My concern was that they were so young, but after watching them, they are solid top to bottom. They have tremendous depth. If any team can take an injury or two and come back, it is this team. I like the Wade Davis acquisition, and Kyle Schwarber is coming back as well." So they have their total at 95.5. It's a big number. In the American League, the Indians have the highest win total, 92.5. But Atlantis believes that the Red Sox actually have a better World Series shot than the Indians do, and that's because Boston is in a tougher division. The Padres, who are rebuilding, they have the lowest total, 64.5. The A's are next, 66.5. and then the Twins at 70.5. And just remember, the Twins only won 59 games a season ago. But here are the totals. Cubs at 95.5, Indians at 92.5, Dodgers 91.5, which is right where they were last year, Nationals 90.5, which is down about 5 games from what they ended up with. They won 95 last year. Red Sox at 90.5. They won 93 last year. A Mets 89.5. They won 87 a year ago. I mean, their starting pitching's terrific. It's just a matter, are guys going to stay healthy or not? That's the deal with the Mets. Astros, Cardinals, Giants, all 87.5. Interesting number there for the Astros. They won 84 last year, so Vegas is like in Houston. Rangers, Blue Jays, 86.5. Now, last year, Texas won 95 games. So Vegas is thinking here that they're going to fall back to the pack. The Mariners at 85.5. Same for the Pirates and Tigers. Pittsburgh was a real disappointment last season. They only won 78 games. And I'm a little bit surprised that they have the Pirates total that high at 85.5. That seems high to me. I mean, they have a good outfield. They're going to move McCutchen out of center field. But you have Marte out there. You have Polanco. Really good outfield there. And some young pitching, but that does seem high. Orioles, 84.5. Now, they won 89 last year. Tough to go against a Buck Showalter club. Yankees at 83.5. They finished fourth in the division last year with 84 wins. AL East, no walk in the park. Royals, 80.5. Rockies, 79.5. Diamondbacks, 78.5, which also may seem high to people because last year they really went in the tank. Big disappointment. Now, in fairness, they had some key injuries, but Arizona won 69 games last season. They have the Marlins, 77.5. The Angels, 76.5. Rays at 75.5. There's a team that only won 68 games last year. Reds, White Sox, 73.5. No Chris Sale anymore in Chicago. Brewers and Phillies, 72.5. Braves, 71.5. They got their new ballpark. And they made a trade for Brandon Phillips from the Reds. And real good fielder. Gold glove type of fielder. Veteran player. Braves are a weird mix. You know, they are going young, but they also brought in some veteran players there. Twins, 70.5, A's, 66.5, and again, I mentioned the Padres, 64.5, so they have the lowest total. So I mentioned every team there. What do you think about your favorite team now that you've heard the number from Vegas? Do you think they go higher or lower? Again, the Cubs, number one at 95.5, Indians are second at 92.5, then the Dodgers at 91.5. So always fun game to play over-under. Here on the Sports Report. This is episode number 456. Thanks so much for tuning in. Paul Roberts with you every Monday on The Grizz. And of course, in the podcast section of iTunes, you can hit me up on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Well, we have to talk about the UConn women and what they have done under Gino Auriemma. Is just astonishing. I mean, to win, and I know many of you probably are not fans of women's basketball, but to win 99 games in a row at the Division I level, I mean, even in high school, how many high school basketball teams do you know that win 99 games in a row? We're talking about Division I NCAA hoops. They are 24-0. They blew out SMU over the weekend, 83-41. Just a mere 42-point victory there. So tonight, they go for win number 100 in a row. And that's going to be at home against South Carolina, who's ranked number 6 in the country. And I mentioned earlier, the Gamecocks have only lost twice. So you have two teams with a combined 2 losses. But then I started to compile a little bit of a list, the best streaks all time in sports. And it's, you know, different sports here. And then you can weigh in on Twitter and tell me which you think is number one. It's not easy. How about, speaking of college basketball, UCLA, 88 straight wins from 71 to 74. The Bruins did not lose. They had two 30-0 seasons and won two NCAA championships. They also won seven consecutive NCAA titles from 1967 to 1973. So that was incorporated a little bit in this, but started earlier. And that's seven straight championships for UCLA. Speaking of hoops, Boston, eight straight NBA titles. I may put that number one. I mean, that's impressive. Eight straight NBA championships. The run started in 1958 for the Celtics, continued until 1966. How about some individual streaks here? Of course, you know about Joe DiMaggio, 56-game hitting streak in 1941. Cal Ripken Jr., 2,632 consecutive games played from 1982 to 1998, did not miss a game. That will never be touched again. No shot. And in the world of baseball, now this is a manager, so I'm not going to put this up there with what DiMaggio or Ripken did, but Connie Mack was a major league manager for 50 consecutive seasons. Now, he owned the team. So when you own the team, you're not going to fire yourself, right? I mean, that gives you some stability when you are the owner. But from 1901 to 1951, he was the manager of the Philadelphia A's. How about golf? Byron Nelson won 11 straight PGA tournaments, including the PGA Championship, which was a match play event back then in 1945. Now, you know, I don't know if competition was on the same level as it is right now. Brett Favre, of course, you know about this one. He made 297 consecutive regular season starts, and if you want to include the playoffs, 321 straight starts for Brett Favre. That streak started in 1992 and ended in 2010. Here's one that I don't value anymore. Lance Armstrong won seven straight Tour de France titles, but had to vacate those victories because he admitted using PEDs. So of that list, individually, Cal Ripken Jr., Joe DiMaggio, those are great ones. Team sports, Boston winning eight straight championships, and UCLA winning seven in a row, and then also that separate 88-game win streak from 71 to 74. That is crazy. I mean, you see the top-ranked teams now in men's basketball. I know Gonzaga is undefeated, but how many times have I mentioned, five, six top 10 teams lost, this past week? I mean, we've had some days where, two or three of the top five teams are losing. So to continue to win like that over and over and over again. Here are some others. And here's UConn's women's team again. From 2008 to 2010, they won 90 straight. Oral Hershiser, this kind of goes in the DiMaggio category a little bit. 59 straight scoreless innings in 1988. How about a little wrestling? Cale Sanderson, 159-0 at Iowa State from 1999 to 2002. And I should clarify, that's wrestling as opposed to this WWE stuff, which is wrestling. Is Coco Beware around anymore? Boxing. Julio Cesar Chavez won 87 straight fights. This is one I was not aware of. From 1980 to 1993, he was a six-time world champ. 87 consecutive fights he won. Edwin Moses, track and field, 122 straight races in the 400-meter hurdles from 77 to 87. So for a decade, he never lost in the 400-meter hurdles. Man, oh man, oh man. Oklahoma's football team in the 50s, 47 straight wins. And then one more here, tennis. Martina Navratilova won 74 consecutive singles matches in 1984. Jeez. Holy cow, 74. So those are some great streaks. I thought it was appropriate because UConn tonight is going for win number 100 in a row. Now's the tough part. I want you to pick and choose what's the best streak of the ones I mentioned. And let me know on Twitter. You can give me best team and also best individual streak. So I'll give you two picks. Let me know on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. That's my handle, at TheSportsRPT. Rolling right along here on episode number 456 of the Sports Report podcast. Let's get to some golf here. The back spasms that forced Tiger Woods to withdraw from a tournament in Dubai will keep him out of his next two scheduled starts. Woods will skip the Genesis Open at Riviera and the Honda Classic in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, due to the back spasms. Tiger says his doctors advised him not to play. They want him to continue treatment so the back calms down. His foundation now runs the Genesis Open in L.A., and Woods was expected to play in that event for the first time since 2006. He's now out. The symptoms are similar to what he experienced before the second round of the Dubai Classic, where he withdrew earlier this month, a shot of first round 77 that included no birdies. The guy's 41 now, came back to competitive golf in December at the Hero World Challenge. Remember, he was out 16 months, all right? And that was due to multiple back surgeries that he had in 2015. And he was playing pretty good in the Bahamas. He led the field in birdies. However, when he returned to the PGA Tour 2 weeks ago at the Farmers Insurance Open, he missed the cut by 4 strokes. The Masters is April the 6th, all right? So there is time, but I think that's what golf fans are really looking forward to. They want to see him play at Augusta in the Masters. My stance, if you've listened to the show or my radio show, you know I haven't changed on Tiger. I haven't been one to write him off, say he's finished, he's washed up, he'll never win another. And there are several reasons why. Number one, the track record. He's won 14 majors, second only to Jack. He's won 79 PGA Tour events, second to Sam Snead. Secondly, it's golf. He's not playing running back or middle linebacker in the NFL. I mean, the primary activity in golf is walking. And third, he's 41. He's not 51. You know, it's not like he's ancient. And again, we're talking about for this sport. But even I must admit that I'm starting to waver on my stance here. He hasn't won a major since the 2008 U.S. Open. I mean, so now we're talking 9 years since he won a major. Hard to believe. And back injuries are no joke. You know, there are a million different injuries now. You hear about ACL, MCL all the time. Baseball, you hear about having Tommy John surgery. But when you mess up your back and, you know, having multiple surgeries, now he's having the spasms, it really makes me wonder if Tiger is going to be able to come back. Do you think he'll ever win another major? He's got 14 right now. I've always said that I think that he will. I think that he could. And I gave you the reasons why. But I'm starting to doubt myself here. And when you hear about the back, not good. How about Jordan Spieth over the weekend? Won at Pebble Beach. Shot a 2-under-70 on Sunday. He was calling it boring golf. You know, he had a big lead. Nobody really threatened him. Won by 4 shots over Kelly Kraft, who's a former U.S. amateur champ. And he is friends with Spieth. Dustin Johnson was third, 5 shots back. Spieth had 14 consecutive pars on Sunday before he made a 30-foot birdie on the 17th. He played the final 28 holes without a bogey. That's impressive. 19 under for the tournament. So good to see him playing well. Only 23. A lot of good young golfers in the game. That's for sure. Dustin Johnson, I mentioned, Jason Day, Spieth. It's a good group in there. So he wins at Pebble Beach. Now, before we wrap up, the NFL season's over. You don't have college football. So maybe you have a little bit more free time to watch some TV or anything else. Let me give you a show here that some friends at work told me about. And I am very, very glad they did. Because I have been binge watching this like crazy. Okay. I'm already through the first four seasons. I just went through the fourth season in less than a week. All right. It is called Homeland. I know many of you are familiar with it. You're probably thinking, Paul, you idiot, what took you so long to watch this? Well, I don't have Showtime. Okay. I have HBO. I don't have Showtime. So I wasn't getting this show. But let me tell you, it is phenomenal, spectacular. It has won Emmys. Claire Danes is the star. She plays, you know, a CIA caseworker, ends up eventually getting promoted to a station chief. But all of the characters in this, very, very complex, including Claire Danes, who plays the role of Carrie. Her boss, Saul, also very complex. Another interesting character named Peter Quinn, who's an assassin. Obviously, Brody, you'll find out about if he's one of the focal characters early on. Watch it. And don't be doing other things when you watch this. This is not one of those type of shows where you can be doing other things. You're on your phone. You know, you're messing around with the million gadgets that you have. You're trying to fold laundry or watch the kids or something. You have to sit down and focus on the show because there's a lot going on. There are a lot of different storylines going on at once. But it's all about, you know, anti-terrorism efforts and things like that. And, you know, it starts out based here in the U.S. and then there are some seasons that are over in the Middle East. It is really good. I would not tell you if it wasn't because I'm only looking at stuff that's great. If it's not great, I'm not going to waste my time. I sleep maybe 5 hours a night. Maybe. I'd say closer to four most nights. So if I want to spend my time on something, it better be good. I was late to the party with Game of Thrones. I was like, this is some dorky Dungeons and Dragons show. Spectacular. I would also say that's great. House of Cards, Breaking Bad. Certainly, you think of Sopranos. If you want to go back a little bit on HBO, a show called The Wire, which was, you know, about cops battling drugs in Baltimore, filmed in Baltimore. Wire, very, very good. These are all what I would call great shows. And I will put Homeland in the mix. I'm not going to tell you it's number one, because those others that I mentioned are really, really, really good. House of Cards, Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad. If I had a vote, I'd probably put that number one because there wasn't a bad season. I don't even know if there was a bad episode in that show. But Homeland, if you haven't seen it, maybe now that you're not watching football games, you have some time, definitely check it out. I am flying through this thing. They just started season six. I'm already through four seasons. I'm almost caught up. So check that one out. That'll do it for episode 456 of the Sports Report Podcast. Thanks again for tuning in and following me on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT. I want to hear your comments on all my topics and my rants today on Twitter at the Sports RPT. Have a great week, everybody. This has been episode number 456 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv.